Hello again, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and this is The Current. ADD, Attention Deficit Disorder, or ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, are becoming two of the most commonly diagnosed behavioral conditions in North America, affecting as many as 10% of school-age children. Typically, they have been treated with drugs such as Ritalin, but there's also increasing interest in another technique for treating ADD, something called neurofeedback. It is a method that claims to be able to train a person's brain waves to stay within a certain range, which ultimately allows for a greater focus. Jeff Warren is a producer at The Current, and he agreed to get wired up to investigate, and then he talked to me about it. So what is neurofeedback?
Okay, well, neurofeedback is something that sounds complicated, but is actually pretty straightforward. It basically means getting feedback about your brain waves. So knowing what your brain waves do help you control them. We have lots of different brain waves. Some show when you're sleepy, others when you're alert, still others when you're restless or focused or totally spaced out. So neurofeedback helps people produce the right kinds of brain waves when they want them. Its practitioners say it can be used to treat lots of conditions, epilepsy, autism, depression, even different forms of addiction. But it's with the treatment of ADD, attention deficit disorder, that neurofeedback has some of its most spectacular successes, or so people say. It basically helps kids and adults produce brain waves that are calm, alert, and focused. It helps them pay attention.
Now, you actually went to a neurofeedback clinic to see firsthand how this is done. What happened to you?
Well, I made my way out to Mississauga to visit a place called the ADD Center. When I got there, the waiting room was full of parents flipping through magazines. It looked like any other waiting room you might expect in a doctor's office or something. Where it gets interesting is when you get a little deeper into the office, things change a bit. Just off the main offices, there are five little rooms with computer terminals. And in each of those little rooms, in front of each of those little terminals, there's a kid between the age of about 7 and 16 looking at their screen with little wires dangling from their earlobes. I initially tried recording one of the kids, but he was too shy, so I decided to get wired up instead.
But you don't have attention deficit disorder.
No, I don't have a disorder, but ADD is about not paying attention. It's about not being able to focus. So I actually ended up finding out that I have some similarities with kids that do have ADD. And I should note here that the clinic treats all kinds of people, not just kids with ADD. Executives come to the center to improve their focus. Athletes come to learn how to get in the zone. The principles are the same for everyone, and so are the hardwiring procedures.
So how do they wire you up?
One electrode on each earlobe, one on the top of your head, and then all those wires feed into a central computer, or rather into the computer terminal in front of you. It's probably easier for me just to play a clip for you. The woman you're about to hear, the woman speaking, is Linda Thompson. She and her husband wrote a textbook about neurofeedback, and they run the center together. Here she is applying the electrodes.
These are the sensors we're going to use. We've got these little gold circles. And gold is a good conductor of electricity. So we're going to attach these to your skin. The one that we're interested in is going to sit on top of your head because we want to see what's happening up here in the frontal lobes. So we rub with a little bit of NuPrep. We just part your hair and rub a little bit with NuPrep. Then we put a little dab of conductive gel. You just feel me putting that conductive gel on. May feel a little cool. It also keeps your hair out of the way. Now we're going to plug the three wires into this cable. Then the electricity can travel from you along the cable into our EEG machine, and you'll see it displayed on the screen. Okay, so there you are live on the screen, Jeff.
Okay, Jeff, you're live. What does it look like?
On the screen, I can see four wavy lines, just like you'd see in a heart monitor, except these ones are measuring my brain waves. And I actually just pause here a moment for dramatic emphasis. These are my brain waves I'm looking at. I'm looking at my brain in real time right there on the computer screen. It's kind of eerie.
First time, right?
It was my first time.
So what happens next?
The next thing that happens is Linda tells me to relax so she can get a measure of my normal brain activity. She needs to do this in order to figure out how my brain needs to be trained, which brain waves need boosting, which need to be calmed down, that kind of thing.
So what do you do while this is going on? Do you just sit there?
Well, I sit there for 1 minute. And then she gets me to do a boring task. This is because people with attention problems have a hard time staying focused on boring tasks. My boring task was to read a boring book. And here's what Linda had to say after I finished reading. I actually hadn't realized I would be asked any questions about the book, so I was sort of taken off guard.
What did you recall of what you read?
I recall that it was about the King of England.
Do you remember who the king was?
King Charles, I think.
Which Charles?
Charles II. Yeah, King Charles II. But I was sort of half zoned out when I was reading the early stuff. It was dead boring. But then when I got to the fire description, it got a little more exciting. So I kind of zoned in.
I asked you again because from the brainwave pattern, I thought, boy, he wasn't registering this because there was too much slow wave. But now we've got to a part. See here? Now I said that the beta in this range is your good thinking wave. So here, what you're reading is registering. You were getting to the part about the plague and the fire. And that caught your interest and you're focused.
So what was so interesting about the fire?
Well, it was action-packed. You know, something was actually happening. Houses were going up like tinderboxes. This was like a little episode of action amid a whole bunch of really boring, dry facts. And I should say, in my defense, the book, by total coincidence, actually turned out to be my real grade 8 history textbook. So I feel like I can hardly be faulted for zoning out.
Well, you can actually be given some credit for remembering that that's where you first saw it. Now, what did that little episode actually show?
Well, for one thing, it shows how variable your brainwaves are from moment to moment. But in my case, it was actually an interesting indication that I actually have some of the patterns of people who are inclined to ADD. I basically quickly lose attention in much the same way that a kid with ADD might do. I had trouble focusing on the task at hand, and this showed up on screen, which I have to say I found sobering. You can't fake out an electrode.
This is really interesting. But okay, we get a picture of your brain now. What happens after that?
Okay, so after all this initial assessment is done, you get to spend 50 minutes playing a bunch of different games. Except they're not like any game you've ever played before, ever. Like, never anything you've ever seen. Basically, you have to affect changes on the screen using only the power of your mind. It's completely weird. I didn't have to bend any spoons, but I ended up, it felt like what I was doing was almost as hard. Here's what it sounded like.
Your job is to keep the red ones down and the green one up. And whenever you do, you score, and you hear the beep. Drop the shoulders, keep relaxed. And there you go. Good.
Okay, I know it doesn't sound like much, but what's actually going on is the titanic mental struggle, not unlike the third episode of Star Wars, when Luke was trying to elevate his fighter plane out of the swamp. In the clip you're listening to, I'm trying to simultaneously shrink two red lines and make another green line grow.
So those beeps I'm hearing, is that what's happening? The lines are growing?
The beeps, every time you hear a beep, I've done that successfully. I've controlled the line successfully. But the thing about this is I'm trying to do this with my brain. I'm trying to basically change the screen with my thoughts alone. Each line represents a different kind of brain activity. So when I manage to be both focused and calm, and the lines do what I want, then I get rewarded with this little beep.
How difficult is this?
It's super hard. Because it's like nothing you've ever done before. You don't even know what you're supposed to do or how you're supposed to do it. You just know when it's working because you hear the beeps. And I eventually figured out that the trick to being sort of both calm and focused was to kind of really try to be in the moment. Basically be like a little Zen master. So you can really begin to see the application this kind of brainwave training would have for kids diagnosed with ADD. And in the game you were just listening to, I was doing okay, but I later played another game where I had to maneuver this fish through a maze, and that did not go well. My fish just sat there like a dead cod. And meanwhile, I could hear a whole bunch of beeps coming from the kid next door, so he was obviously a little further along in his training.
Interesting stuff. So you had your assessment done, and now you've been through this first round of training. How long does it take for this to work on you or for anybody else?
Well, it's a private clinic, so it's not covered by Medicare, and it does take a few sessions. In fact, at the ADD Center, they recommend 40 sessions. Each 50-minute session costs about $100, so your total expense for a full course of treatment is about $4,000. Now, some kids and adults see improvement after the first few sessions, but most of them end up completing all 40. They come to the clinic for 1 hour twice a week, and the whole thing takes about 5 months. The other thing is, I mean, according to Linda and her husband, the control and focus that you can achieve, it lasts forever. Linda compares it to riding a bike. She says, once your brain learns how to do it, it never forgets.
Now, can this work for everybody?
I'll let Linda Thompson answer that.
The results really range from good to spectacular. We generally see children, as I said, with improved intellectual levels and academic performance. But if there's one thing that parents say to me most, it's that he's grown up a lot in the last few months. So everything that seems to go along with maturity seems to come online as the child does this training. We've also had cases of children who never would have been considered gifted, who qualified for gifted programs after training, because now they could focus and produce the work. They'd always been bright, but they hadn't produced the work in a consistent fashion. And then, of course, you've got your more garden variety ADHD, where the child can now sit. He's not getting sent to the principal's office. He has more friends, and the self-esteem is improved. This works in 90% of cases. There are certain cases where it doesn't work. The ones where it doesn't work are usually those who drop out without having done sufficient training, or in cases where there's family dysfunction, because then the child doesn't have the emotional energy for learning, and this is a kind of learning.
Jeff, it seems almost too good to be true. If it's working so well, why don't more doctors use this treatment?
That's a very good question. I asked Linda that, and she thinks it's not so much a resistance in the medical community as it is a lack of awareness about neurofeedback. And one thing she does say is that neurofeedback isn't the complete answer for treating ADD. For her, it's a complementary treatment.
It's important to realize that neurofeedback is not a cure-all. And you want to combine it with other things. Diet, sleep, exercise are all enormously important. So you have to do those common sense things as well. You can also combine neurofeedback with medications. The two are quite compatible, and occasionally if a child is very hyperactive, you need that chemical restraint to take the edge off so they can do training in the first place. 80% of the children we see who are on medication have been weaned off the medication totally by the time they've done 40 sessions, and the others have typically reduced the use of medication.
Interesting stuff. Jeff Warren, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
Jeff Warren is a producer with The Current in Toronto, and you're listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1. Well, these might sound like pretty astonishing claims. Neurofeedback practitioners say EEG biofeedback can do wonders for children with ADD or ADHD, but other clinical psychologists, the majority, are more skeptical. For them, neurofeedback is more hype than science. With us to discuss this technique are two ADD researchers from different sides of the neurofeedback divide. Dr. Andrew Addisman is Director of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics at New York's Schneider Children's Hospital. He's a leading expert on the treatment and diagnosis of ADD, and he is in New York. Dr. Joel Lubar is Professor of Psychology at the University of Tennessee. He is one of the pioneers of treatment of ADD with neurofeedback. He has studied and treated ADD for more than 30 years. He's at home in Knoxville, Tennessee. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, before we get into the specifics of concerns about all of this, I want to understand a bit more about how neurofeedback actually works. Joel Lubar, what is actually happening in the brain when it's trained with neurofeedback?
Well, what you're actually doing is you're of course changing the electrical pattern of the brain, because that's exactly what you're training. You're training specifically to change specific frequencies in specific locations. But underneath that, there are chemical changes that occur as well, and we think that there may be evidence. In fact, there are studies being done now to show that the oxygen utilization, the metabolism of the brain, and possibly the distribution of some of the neurotransmitters are also changing.
And why is attention deficit disorder, ADD, in particular, so well served by neurofeedback?
Well, first of all, it's a very prevalent disorder. The original literature indicated between 3 and 7%, but in some locations it's as high as 10% of the population. It's a lifelong disorder in the sense that although it changes its characteristics as one gets older, it's still there. So it's very prevalent, and it interferes with so many aspects of life, from education to relationships with individuals to work-related situations, that it's very important for people that have ADD and are experiencing the problems with it to try to bring it under control.
Andrew Addisman, what are your concerns about neurofeedback?
Well, I think that neurofeedback, the studies that have been done to date seem promising, and certainly there have been reports in the literature where benefits have been shown. I think that there's widespread concern that the studies that have been done to date really lack the scientific rigor that are necessary to convince people that this is really the intervention that's making the difference.
Well, what kind of studies would you need to see in order to be convinced then of the effectiveness of neurofeedback?
Well, the general expectation for new studies and new interventions is that an intervention be evaluated in what's referred to as a sort of a double-blind study whereby investigators and hopefully even the patients themselves wouldn't be aware of whether they're getting a placebo condition or the direct intervention. Also, when it comes to creating comparison groups, patients or subjects should be assigned to those groups randomly. And to date, there really haven't been very many supportive studies at all as far as random assignment and blinded studies of neurofeedback.
Well, I want to pursue that point in a moment, but I just want to ask you, do you feel there are safety issues with neurofeedback?
I don't know that there are safety issues so much. I think the concerns that I have are that, number one, families may pursue a somewhat unproven therapy at great expense and delay or defer a more traditional effective therapies. That's one concern. And I think that when I hear comments about Ms. Thompson made the statement that, you know, the treatment lasts forever and that 80% of patients or more can come off medication, I think that that's offering a lot, and I'm not even sure that Dr. Lubar would stand by those statements.
Well, Dr. Lubar, let's talk about the concern about double-blind controlled studies. What's your response to the concern about that?
Well, they're very difficult to do. Actually, the reason I got into this field is when I first developed this area, which was back in the middle 1970s, our very first study was a double-blind study. It was a very difficult study to do. And it was very hard to keep it completely blind because subjects began to realize that as soon as you switched the type of feedback that they were getting, they were aware that something had changed. So it is tricky to do that. Also, these studies last for long periods of time. With medication, sometimes it's much easier to do because they're short-acting. So, for example, with the stimulants, you can give the stimulants on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and take them off on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and you can see effects right away. But with neurofeedback, it takes many sessions to train somebody, and then if you change the training protocol by putting in what we call false feedback or actually reversing the feedback conditions, it isn't long before they realize something has happened, and they know right away that the study has been changed. So it makes it tricky. Now, the use of randomized groups is a much better approach, where one group gets, let's say, the neurofeedback in the specific location which is most appropriate. Another group may get neurofeedback in a different part of the brain, so to speak. Another group may get medication only or behavior therapy, so that you're comparing different treatments to see which ones seem to be the most powerful. And although the studies done so far are not quite randomized, that would be the next step.
Well, Dr. Lubar, why do you think the medical establishment has been so slow to accept neurofeedback?
Well, I think there's several reasons. One, the training takes a long time, whereas the medications are much shorter in terms of their acting. They can act within a matter of days, whereas the neurofeedback takes a matter of weeks and sometimes months to show its effect. That's one aspect of it. The other is that it hasn't really been publicized enough. There just isn't enough public information out there, so a lot of physicians are not aware of it.
Now, Dr. Adesman, how do you treat ADHD in your practice?
Well, I'm a developmental pediatrician specializing in the evaluation and management of children and adolescents with ADHD, and so the first and important step is careful assessment, and I think that without careful assessment, it's very, very hard to feel comfortable recommending different treatments to families. Once a child's been diagnosed as having ADHD or ADD, and one's sort of also assessed for other possible associated conditions, at that point, then you look to recommend a series of different treatments, whether it be educational interventions, behavioral interventions, or possibly medication.
And what percentage end up medicated?
Well, I think that's going to vary a little bit based on the age of the child. I am not a proponent of medication among hyperactive or ADHD preschool kids. I really think medication, for the most part, should be reserved for school-aged children who are experiencing significant difficulties. I would recommend medication in the overwhelming majority of patients because at this point in time, for better or for worse, medication has consistently been shown to be the single most effective treatment for kids with ADHD.
And Ritalin often comes up. Is that the most commonly used prescription?
Ritalin is a brand name for methylphenidate, and methylphenidate is the most widely prescribed stimulant medication for kids with ADHD.
Now, one of the reasons neurofeedback has become popular is that some parents are very uncomfortable with the idea of medicating their children. How do you reassure concerned parents?
Well, I think that it takes some time. I think what needs to do is, first of all, explain to families why medication is being recommended, when it's being recommended, that the studies, and these are very, very rigorous studies, have shown it to be very effective in the short term. And there are more and more studies coming out showing efficacy, you know, a year or 2 years later as well. I think that the other important piece is to understand what parents' fears or concerns are. And I think that there continue to be various misconceptions and myths regarding medication for kids with ADHD.
Well, what about the concern that drugs such as Ritalin are overprescribed?
Well, that's an excellent point, but it goes back to my very first point, and that is that the first thing you really need to do is do a careful assessment. And I think that, you know, what goes on at a societal level, if there are instances where children are being treated with medication or medications are being recommended without a careful assessment, that may go on in some circles, but certainly in my practice and all the positions I teach and train, the emphasis is on careful assessment first.
Mm-hmm. Now, Joel Lubar, what are your concerns about the widespread use of Ritalin?
Not particularly concerned. I mean, there are a number of individuals that sometimes have negative effects with the medications, or there are individuals that just, for whatever reasons, don't want to be on them. We are not in any way anti-medication in our approach. We look at neurofeedback and medications as complementary to each other. But there is one thing that Dr. Thompson pointed out, and it is true, and that is that the effects of the neurofeedback seem to be very long-lasting. I can't say lifelong because we haven't followed anybody for their entire lifespan, but we have had the advantage of following people up to 20 years from childhood to adulthood, and we've seen many cases where they started on medication, were able to be weaned off, used the neurofeedback, and continued to be relatively free of symptoms, and I don't use the word cure because it's not appropriate, but well-managed, able to function quite normally without either any kind of medication at all for ADD. They may have medications for other disorders, but do very well after they've had neurofeedback with very careful follow-up and very careful pre- and post-measurements.
You know, there are those who criticize any treatment of ADD, whether it is prescription or something like neurofeedback. They fear the end result in both cases is quite similar, that a child will have an engineered personality, that this person will be bland or middle of the road, and all creativity and energy will be leached out. I'd like to hear from both of you about the concerns on that. Dr. Adesman?
I think it's important to understand that, you know, first and foremost, you never want your treatment to be worse than the disease. And I think that the fact that there are millions of children taking medication for ADHD bespeaks the fact that parents, although they may be, you know, reluctant to use medication, that they're convinced their children are doing better with the medicine than without. And I think that, you know, effective treatment for ADHD is important. I think Dr. Lubar and I would agree on that. And the question is how you provide the most effective therapy. Untreated, ADHD is associated with a multitude of psychosocial, educational costs, and I think that those are unnecessary for kids, adolescents, and adults.
Dr. Lubar.
I've never seen any instance of an individual becoming, quote, less creative or less interesting, and so to speak, as a result of neurofeedback treatment, so I don't think that that's really a problem at all.
Well, Dr. Lubar, this is still a largely unregulated industry. What do you think the future holds for neurofeedback?
Here's the thing, that neurofeedback is now being used in this country alone by about 2,500 practitioners, and it's being used extensively in Europe and Australia, and now it's beginning to be used in South America, so it's growing very rapidly. We do have a number of controlled studies that are in the works right now, both comparing neurofeedback with other treatments and even looking at pre- and post-measurements using PET scans and MRIs, functional MRIs, to show what changes occur in the brain. And I think that if these studies come out positively, that the use of neurofeedback is going to increase considerably. That doesn't mean it's going to supplant medication. That's not the purpose. The whole thing is that anything that will help these individuals is important. They're experiencing tremendous distress in their life at many different levels, and neurofeedback can help further the amount of positive outcome along with medication, and I think it should be encouraged.
Gentlemen, thank you both for your thoughts on this today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Andrew Adisman is Director of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics at the Schneider Children's Hospital in New York. He was in our New York studio. And Dr. Joel Lubar is Professor of Psychology at the University of Tennessee. He spoke to us from his home in Knoxville.